being recorded. I'm Kevin Mahler. I am the board president of GPA Nebraska chapter, and I am so happy to welcome you all today. And we're here to learn and converse about a really important and under-talked about aspect of federal grants, which is grants going to tribal nations. And presenting on this topic today are my fellow board members, Aaron Mockler of Fox Creek Fundraising and Linda Santee of Winnebago Community Health Services. And we're going to be here till 12:30 today. We need to end at 12:30, and there'll be opportunities to ask questions and share information. So, ladies and gentlemen, will you please join me in welcoming Aaron Mockler and Linda Santee?
Thank you, Kevin.
Good morning, everybody. As Kevin said, both Aaron and I are GPA Nebraska board members, and we're both happy and humbled to respond to the request to deliver this webinar. Neither one of us is native, and we certainly aren't attempting to speak for native people. In fact, we believe a future panel focused on a native perspective could be useful. We believe there are even people on this call who could do a great job on that, and people who will be joining us as we move forward. But and when we get to the Q&A portion of this hour, we invite and welcome new nuanced input from our native attendees to give that more holistic perspective. Perhaps a future presentation, GPA or otherwise, could focus on that native perspective, as opposed to this one that is a simple recitation of the way the federal government and state governments have a different relationship with tribes and tribal organizations than is the case with other fundees. And with that, as Kevin had said, this is a tribal nations are not just another nonprofit. Since Kevin did introduce us, we can move on from this title page and begin the program, begin the presentation.
Is this one mine? Why this
Yes.
matters? Yes, that's right. Okay. So, just to give a little bit of background, I did work with the Winnebago Tribe of Nebraska for a year and a half. I worked as a grant professional. Additionally, I worked with the Winnebago Comprehensive Healthcare System. Is that right? as a domestic violence director. So, I've worked in Indian country and I've worked with grants that have to do with tribal grants as well. So, and I see a few people I know from the times that I worked there. So, I'm really glad to see everybody here. But why does this matter? We envision this topic as a good intro for people who are interested in tribal matters in how the federal government interacts with tribes in the grant space. And we thought, with the executive orders that came out last year targeting DEI, we did want to make that distinction that tribal funding is not DEI funding. Those DEI executive orders that came out absolutely have nothing to do with any of the tribal set asides or competitive opportunities that are available to tribes. So, tribal nations are sovereign governments. They have their own constitutions. They have their own government. They are their own body of government. They interact with the federal government as their own sovereign governments with treaties. So, they are absolutely not subordinate to the federal government, although they do receive funds funding from the federal government. There are multiple funding systems. Tribal organizations often manage at least tribal and federal funding streams, sometimes state funding streams. In Nebraska, that can be a little bit complicated because sometimes Nebraska does not, they don't word their opportunities in a way that makes tribes eligible all the time. So that takes kind of on a case-by-case basis. And then private funding streams, lots of private philanthropists, private foundations will give make tribal governments eligible recipients of their funding. Tribal nations operate under their own governmental, cultural, and community structures that differ
I just
from
don't like getting no's
nonprofit organizations.
back on proposals.
If everyone can mute themselves, that'd be great. And the it's a it's radically different from nonprofit organizations. So I can't even get into all the ways that it's different. There's really no similarity at all. So that's the long and short of that. I will hand it over to you, Linda.
And I'm going to look at the map of Nebraska and point out that since this is GPA Nebraska, it makes sense to know what our landscape is. Starting from the top of the map, the Santee Sioux Nation is in the northern part of the state. The Ponca tribe, which doesn't have a real reservation, but is located around Nebraska. They were forcibly removed to Oklahoma, and when they came back, they have land and have headquarters in Omaha and Sioux City and Niobrara, Nebraska. The Omaha tribe in Nebraska is south of the Winnebago tribe of Nebraska, and those two are along the Missouri River. So, those are the four main tribes in the state, each of which has its own history. So I painted the landscape, Aaron, for you.
I think this one is yours
It
too.
sure is. Sorry. As Aaron was pointing out, Indian country is not monolithic. The treaties are different. Jurisdictional authorities are different. The land status is different. And funding formulas and eligible programs can vary, as obviously is government. Some tribes might have an elected tribal council chair. Some might have an elected tribal chief. Some might still follow heredity. And the differences are not only with the four that are here, but as of January 30th, there are 575 federally recognized tribes in the country. There are also some tribes that are only recognized at a state level. So, as you can imagine, there are a lot of variations, and there is no single native funding model. Then I'll move on. Thank you, Aaron. And again, as Aaron pointed out, but I'll underscore, the differences between the relationship between the federal government and Indian country is a matter of treaty obligations versus diversity, equity, and inclusion initiatives. So the differences are a real anchor for everything that follows in this conversation and that underscores the relationships that are there. The sovereign obligation, the treaty obligations are on the tribal side, as opposed to an organizational initiative, which isn't to diminish that, but it's coming from a totally different perspective. Tribes have treaty and law-based relationships, and other communities are looking at values and policy based and precedent driven relationships with the United States government and its states. The treaty obligations are legally binding, and DEI initiatives, as we are seeing currently, are institutionally driven and can be altered. And there is an enduring political status to the relationship that the tribes and the federal government have, as opposed to, again, as we are seeing, DEI initiatives that can shift by leadership, funding climates, etc., Supreme Court decisions. So it's a government-to-government relationship that we're talking about here.
So, some examples that Indian country specific funding may look a little bit different than the government funding that you're used to seeing for your nonprofits or even your municipalities or counties. You've got your competitive tribal NOFOs, Notice of Funding Opportunities. For sure, the Indian Community Development Block Grant under HUD, Indian Housing Block Grant under HUD are competitive opportunities. The Office on Violence Against Women and the Office for Victims of Crime have set-asides. So those set-asides are different. You have to submit an application, but that there's a the funding is set aside for that purpose. Then you have your formula and allocation grants. Formula grants are where you look up your tribe and see what is allocated to that tribe. They calculate that based on a formula. So I know I was just looking up a what was it? I can't remember which one it was, but I was looking it up and it turned out it was a workforce development grant, and it turned out to be a formula grant that they tell you how much you can request, and that's it. You don't request less, you don't request more. It's your formula, and it's based on population and service area and all that kind of stuff. And then you've got your allocations, which are like the Indian Housing Block Grant allocations, which are allocated to tribally designated housing entities. And that I'm not as familiar with. I can't remember. I don't know whether you always have to apply for those or whether those just come through. And you have some Indian Health Service funding streams also that are allocations. Then you have your contracts, like your Bureau of Indian Affairs 638 contracts, your self-determination agreements, and your self-governance compacts. Those are probably, I would say they're definitely subordinate to a treaty, but they are contracts in every sense of the word. So not everything in Indian country operates as a traditional competitive grant. What is a 638 contract? This is under the Indian Self-Determination Education Assistance Act. It is, I don't have the history of PL 93 638 in front of me, and but it's definitely it's rooted in the self-determination framework, which is where tribes exercise their inherent right to govern. So being most familiar with Winnebago, Winnebago has self-determination over their health system, and they have been working, and somebody can tell me if that's progressed onto the compact stage with their law enforcement as well. So the self-determination would be over law enforcement and healthcare, law enforcement being BIA and healthcare being IHS. This is where tribes contract to administer their federal programs and services directly rather than having BIA or IHS administer them for them. And it is fundamentally different from a standard competitive grant application. I don't have a ton of experience with 638, but I did fill out a few of their contracts when I was working with Winnebago. So I know that there's some aspects of it that you may not think of under law enforcement, but there's like emergency services, firefighting, that kind of thing gets some contract money from BIA under self-determination. And anybody can, anybody can come into the chat and correct me on anything that I'm incorrect on. Finer points are not my forte. The federal government does retain trust responsibility even as tribes manage the programs, meaning that the federal government still owes the money that is allocated to those tribes to support these services. So the health services, which IHS also manages some of the public health things that you, again, you might not think of, like infrastructure supporting sewer and water. IHS and BIA still owe that money to the tribes to get those things done. So, a case example of how different funding streams operate differently. I brought up the Office of Native American Programs because I have probably that's my number one experience level is with ONAP, and I found it interesting when last year when HUD had their website altered when the government was shut down, and they I don't know if anybody saw it, but they did have a very political statement on their website. ONAP operates under HUD, but it just operates very differently. And while a lot of my colleagues in the non-tribal sector were kind of scrambling with HUD and saying, when are they going to release this NOFO? What's going to happen? When are they going to tell us when we got our award? We, under ONAP, we stayed pretty steady. Again, going back to the DEI thing, HUD had to radically change its NOFOs that it was releasing to remove and scrub a lot of the DEI language that had previously been in there under previous administrations. ONAP, the NOFO did not change that much. So that's probably the prime example that I have of how tribal grants operate very differently than DEI initiatives. I'm gonna move on. There you go, Linda.
Hey, so here's some, it's not intended necessarily to be all inclusive, but examples of some of the federal agencies that have unique relationships with tribal nations. And they include the Department of Health and Human Services. So you know how there's, what is it, like 13 agencies, SAMHSA and HRSA and CDC, and it just all the divisions of the Department of Health and Human Services, one of which is Indian Health Services. And Winnebago Comprehensive Healthcare System, for example, works with IHS on competitive grants, on certain grants that you might not think of as necessarily part of health service delivery, but that IHS has traditionally recognized as part of the treaty obligations, and that includes, for example, staff quarters housing, and so we've built a duplex to support people who are coming in to help work at the hospital and with the public health department. The Department of the Interior, another example, and that's one of its divisions is the Bureau of Indian Affairs. So when as Aaron said the Winnebago Police Department assumed operations of its policing responsibilities for the tribe. They had to negotiate with BIA in that instance, and the Department of Housing and Urban Development, HUD. The example that Aaron sort of dove into in depth a moment ago, the Office of Native American Programs. So, throughout the federal government, there is an acknowledgement that these are treaty obligations, and there are dedicated entities that are working to fulfill those treaty obligations. Thanks, Aaron.
Yeah. So other distinct systems, again, like Linda said, this is not meant to be comprehensive. This is meant to be just a taste of how this may be different. You've got your tribal colleges and land grant institutions, which Little Priest in Winnebago is. And those are tribally controlled institutions with federal designations and funding. You've got tribal designated housing entities, which is like your housing authority under your municipality, only it's directly under the tribal governance. Like for instance, the Indian Housing Block Grant allocation, if a tribe has a TDHE, that money goes to the TDHE. They take I don't want to say precedence, but they take, preeminence over any other entity in the community, and sometimes the tribe. Now, if the tribe doesn't have a TDHE, then the allocation may go to the tribe. You've got your Native Community Development Financial Institutions, which I'm going to skim over because I don't know a whole lot about those. And you've got your tribal courts and governance structure. So tribal courts are sovereign, and they make their own decisions and based on the tribal constitution and the ordinances thereof. So Indian country, again, can be a little bit, I know when I worked in domestic violence, jurisdiction was a huge issue. Who has jurisdiction over this particular issue? And it can be very confusing because, as going all the way back to the beginning of this presentation, as Linda said, every tribe operates on as its own entity, and they're all different. All the treaties are different. All the constitutions are different. All the governments are different. So you really can't put tribes under Native American issues or anything like that. They really are each separate.
So, in terms of practical takeaways, first off, don't assume that all tribal funding works like nonprofit funding, right? Understand that sovereignty is paramount before, if you're a dominant culture, if you're not for profit, before proposing partnerships. Understand that you're not dealing with another not-for-profit. In fact, 501c3 tax designations don't necessarily have to be the way in which tax exemptions can work in Indian country. There's another part of the IRS tax code, 7871. So I turn in a grant for the Winnebago Comprehensive Healthcare System, where I'm being asked, "Are you a not-for-profit?" and give proof with your 501 with your designation. And I say, "Yep, we're a nonprofit." And I send in the legal opinion that says we fall under the 7871 part of the IRS tax code. And No federal government entity, any of the divisions of HHS or DOJ or anywhere else, nor any foundations, private foundations have ever asked. So it isn't even, again, to emphasize the same part of the tax code where Indian country's tax exemption lies. The notice of funding opportunities oftentimes will say, and we sort of alluded to this, but to as you read them, you'll sometimes see that there is 50 grants being awarded nationwide, of which 40 are 10. 10 are going to, if there are appropriate applications that come in, going to tribal entities, and those might be a tribe or a tribal organization. It might say there's going to be a preference for up to five tribe or tribal organizations, or it might, like I said, have an explicit carve out. And as we've emphasized throughout this, flattening all tribes into one category is sloppy thinking, so don't do it. And relationship building matters more than transactional grant making. And as is the case in life, I think if when working with tribal governments or tribal organizations for dominant culture and other not-for-profits who are on this call, just moving from try to let go of any assumptions and honest interest that can take the form of curiosity will help for conversations, dialogue, understanding, and partnerships.
So here we are, again, just being very forthright. I certainly will not claim any kind of expertise in this. I have a taste of experience, and I think that Linda kind of expressed at the very beginning for both of us, and I completely agreed that we never intended this to be an explanation of native systems to native people. So, the idea of this was to give you, if you were intrigued by, seeing the executive order that came out that said DEI is bad, don't do it, and then wondered, wait, there's tribal opportunities still coming out, and they still have the same language that they had before. Why is that? That is because tribal grants are not the same as any of the diversity, equity, and inclusion language that came before. So I am going to open it up and say, please, please, please ask questions. We have another half hour, and Linda and I wanted to kind of skim through this to give you guys have plenty of time to discuss and talk about your experiences for sure, and ask questions, please.
In the chat, apologies, I don't know who G Wood is, but relationship building is so important. And hear. Of course, in life, but if there's any generalizations that could be made as we go through this discussion, I think the fact that relationships are important is one that we're on pretty firm ground to make. So thank you for underscoring that.
Yeah, I'll say that at the ri I don't believe that I'll offend anybody by sharing this story. I got a client this year that I had not had previously. And they were very excited to get me as their consultant because of my history of working. And they said, well, we want to move into reservations. We want to do our work on reservations. And I was like, well, number one, have you checked to see if any work like that is being done on reservations? Number two, it's important for you to understand what you're going in to do. I didn't particularly think it was a very appropriate thing, but I was trying to ask them questions to encourage them to think along the lines of a relationship rather than, having a kind of, what's the term I want to use? Help me out, Linda.
Service delivery model.
Yeah, let's go with that. So, I think if anybody is interested in working, with tribes and on tribal, or if we have any grant writers here that are intrigued by the differences in how federal grants work for tribes, the first step is asking questions.
Hi, I'm Katie Lejeune with Sunflower Grant Writers, and I just wanted to follow up, Aaron. We have been doing some work with the Coos Tribe in Oregon, and it is new territory for our firm. And I just was wondering what you both think is sort of the best way to educate ourselves. I know, like you said, asking questions, which is always a great answer, I think, to learn. But is there sort of a place you can go to learn more, or like something you can look at that would give us more information and tools as we continue working with them?
I'm going to say a couple things and then I'm going to obviously give Linda a chance to respond. But I think we have a few people on this call who I think would probably have a lot more insight into this. But my as a non-tribal person, giving you have a great day, Latoya. Giving you my advice, I worked on the reservation. And one of the most powerful experiences that I had was having the opportunity to learn about historical trauma. And that's kind of, not coming from a scarcity mindset, but certainly understanding a lot of the background to the. Where we are today is really important. So, any chance that you get, I would say learn from a native person or people. Lots of the tribes that you might work with have their own programs that you might be able to. I don't know. You're probably remote from Oregon, right? So, you're not there. But I also think though. If you have it in your budget, I think that going to meet in person is really important. So going there and seeing the land and seeing the people that you're working with and having an opportunity to learn more about that particular tribe's history, where they moved from. What they called themselves, what their language is, any of those things, I think is really important. But I'm going to open it up to Linda and then anybody else on our call who has any insight for Katie on this.
Thanks, Aaron. Just to kind of underscore what Aaron already said, Katie, I think that Aaron and I have both worked with tribes that happen to be located in Nebraska. And so, in the same way that I would have a modicum of understanding with the Winnebago Tribe of Nebraska, for example, anything that I might say might get us going in a slight in a wrong direction or in a derailed direction from the relationship and the circumstances, the perspective of the tribe with whom you're working in Oregon. So that curiosity, that inquisitive mind, that respectful dialogue with the people with whom you're working, I think needs to be just that, with the people with whom you're working, because don't assume that what you've learned about one tribe is necessarily the same situation as that of a different tribe. So if you ended up with clients from more than one tribe, even if they're in the same part of the country, part of what is now the United States, I wouldn't necessarily, and it's hard, right? Because we put one foot in front of each other each day because we know that that's how you walk. And so it's hard to try to leave all assumptions at the door, but just being as absolutely open and inquisitive as possible, and know that what you can learn from each relationship is helpful to carry on.
Thank you both. That's very helpful.
You bet. I think, humility is almost a dirty word in our culture anymore. And I think that that's a shame because humility doesn't mean walking around hating yourself. It doesn't mean constantly feeling sorry for something that you personally didn't do. But humility does mean recognizing what I came to recognize, working on the reservation was that the way that I look represents a certain thing to the people that I'm working with, and I need to always be mindful of that if somebody who doesn't know me looks at me, they might see something that I don't believe in or represent, and I have to overcome that. So I think I think we all could really develop our humility. And I think that that will get you really far. Just in it'll definitely get you far among the people that you want to work with.
Aaron and I both, I think it's fair to say, present as Caucasians, right? Which we are. It could very well be that we weren't. It could be that we were indigenous. It could be that we are African American. We self-identify that, as Creole or African American or some other ethnicity. And that is the case in Indian country also. There are people that to one's eye might end up not looking what the Westerns, the films make you think of as Native Americans. They may look more African American, they may look more European American, they may look more Asian American. And so there's again, there's a political identity that is involved in enrollment in a tribe, and each tribe has its own definition of what's necessary to be able to be enrolled in that tribe, and so there are people who might identify with that tribe, but who aren't specifically enrolled. And so that's another layer also, that just because somebody looks like Aaron and Linda doesn't mean they're not necessarily tribal members, but in this instance, that's what it means.
Do we have any other questions? Hey, Brittany.
Hey guys, joining the chat. Hi, Erin. Hi, Lori.
Hi.
Hey, Brittany.
Just get a little insight
Didn't.
on this on my partake. I am the Winnebago Tribe's Planning and Development Director. We write grants for the Winnebago Tribe of Nebraska's and the departments in our community. I personally know Erin. She's worked in our department before, and I'm trying to get her back over here. Linda works right across the street from us, and we've helped her with a couple tribal resolutions for grants too that she's had to written before. And I just want to touch base a little bit about, having to work with them. They're excellent grant writers. They've known our community so much that they are well versed in what they do and assisting us with some grants that we've applied for. Erin touched on the fact that she did work for the DV program too, and she was in previous positions here. So the amount of time that she's worked here with our community and our organization, she's learned a lot with the culture, the religion, and just asking questions. There are times where she's gotten some setbacks from individuals because she touched base with this too. There's trauma involved. There's protectives of religion involved. There's a lot of things that are incorporated with working with tribal governments that you're wanting to know. And I just want to let you know that the biggest thing you can ever find about for a or tribal organization that you're wanting to work with and wanting to work with is. We can't just assume and jump into that organization and say, yeah, I want to help you. They're gonna come back to you and say, this is kind of feeling like an aggressive approach. Like you don't come that way. You have to understand where our traditional values are, where our culture sits, and all of that. And that's where the questions come into place. It doesn't take having to ask those questions too, but also you have to learn about the historical things that we've had to endure with each tribe. Every tribe is different. I'm not an enrolled member here with Winnebago. My husband is, but I come from the Navajo tribe in Arizona, and we have different historical traumas that we've endured. Just a lot of things that go along with just identifying the tribe, the historical part of it. So I really wanted to partake in the fact that please find some sort of I don't know if a tribe has a museum or anything like that. We have a museum here that talks about our history here, where we were once in Wisconsin, and we have been located down up to where we are now. Just a lot of things that involve that. So I really want to commend the fact that like we can't just tell you unless you ask questions, but you also have to be willing to learn from that tribe what they're coming from and how accepting it is okay to do this or that or not. Because at the end of the day, I think at just an example, I was looking at a drum, admiring it, and one of the gentlemen were like, "No, you can't touch that. You're a woman, and there are facts behind that. Like it's for the men. They sing the songs here, and they really do all those prayers that are in those songs too. So it's there's understanding behind it and asking questions or like don't feel bad that it's coming from a negative place. There's always reasons behind why we have our cultures and traditions embedded into everything with our tribal organizations. So really take a look at a tribe's history, where they come from, the language, everything, and do your research on it before trying to extend yourself into a community that you are considered an outsider and need to feel more comfortable with where everybody is coming into place with just kind of coming to an agreement. And then of course, obviously that's where the partnerships come into place, understanding of how things work around here, because again, we have a tribal constitution, we have different ways that an organization works. It just all filters throughout that way, but understanding and learning everything from a tribe with the history is going to really help you guys come a long way with working with those organizations. Yep. That's about it. I do need the slideshow from you, whoever is conducting it. Erin, is it you? If you can send it to me, I have a grant writer and I need her to
Yeah.
you touch base with this, and I was trying to get her on this, but it was just too late. So I'll have to send slideshow over to
Absolutely.
you. When are you coming back? But other than that, you guys are doing really good. I appreciate. I didn't know this was going to be you guys' presentation. I was like, Nebraska Trapper. Okay, it took my interest because of the Tribal Nations, but you guys are doing great. I appreciate
Thank
the
you.
work and collaborations that you're doing, especially when you're still not here. You're still helping us and helping everybody around understand our community and tribes all around. Linda, you know where to reach me at. Email me if you can. But I do have to go and pick up my kids now because it's summertime. And if anybody needs any questions or help, my email is brittany.thomas@winnebagotribe too. If you guys have any more questions, I'll see you guys later on.
Thanks so
Especially Aaron, I
much,
need your
Brittany.
help.
Oh, I will.
Anytime.
Yeah, I will be seeing you for sure. Thank you.
Guys, bye.
Thanks so much. Bye. Yeah, I love what Brittany said there. There was something that she said that I wanted to kind of snag on to. But I can't remember what it was. Does anybody else have any questions?
If no one does have any questions, this meeting does not need to go to 12:30. If there are no further questions, we can end whenever. It's currently 12:20 here in the Central Time Zone.
Well, if anybody, in the meantime, yeah, thank you, Natalie. It's been really great to make this presentation. I was actually glad to see a small group because I was really nervous coming up on this, and you all have made it really welcoming and warm, and I appreciate it, and I appreciate your curiosity. I think that curiosity is probably the way to overcome a lot of things that we're all going through right now. So,
What she said.
well, thank you, everybody. This has been the GPA Nebraska chapter event for June 2026. We've got our next event happening on August 20th. You'll hear more about that soon. We're not having any public events during the month of July. So I wish everyone a great summer. Thank you so much to our presenters, and thanks to the attendees. All right,
Thanks,
bye-bye.
everybody.
Thank you.